What's up, nerds? Welcome
hey, Patrick,
to...
good luck,
God
man.
damn it, you son of a bitch, Adam. What?
No, I was just saying good luck.
Thanks for the wish of good luck.
Okay.
The Dynasty Guru presents Dynasty's Child.
We're not experts, we're gurus. There's a difference.
With your host, Patrick Magnus.
What loser did you bring to us this week?
Featuring Keaton DeRocher.
Well, I did not know that.
And featuring...
Jake, I don't know how to say your last name.
It's Devereaux.
Devereaux?
Devereaux.
Devereaux.
There is no N in the name.
Produced by Adam Lawler.
Hey, you guys. Hey, everybody.
Start over.
Yep, why don't you try that one more time.
What's up, nerds? Welcome to Dynasty's Child, your flagship fantasy baseball podcast with a focus on Dynasty formats. I'm your host, Patrick Magnus, and I am a writer over at the Dynasty Guru. As always, I'm joined by fellow fantasy baseball writer, Keaton DeRocher. Keaton, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. Pretty good.
Just pretty good?
Yeah, coming off a great pod yesterday with Jake. Ready to hammer out another pod today.
Yeah, you're grinding. You're on that grind.
I'm feeling it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, we're joined today with our producer, Adam Lawler, also a writer over at Pitcher's List and the Dynasty Guru. Adam, how are you doing today?
I'm doing super great, Patrick. So great. Thank you for asking me.
That's too much positivity for me. I'm going to need you to reel it in and kick up the cynicism just a little bit, please.
2018 was a hellish year. Maybe 2019 will be better.
There we go. That's better. All right. On today's show, we're going to be talking about all the crazy signings that have been happening off the hot stove. We're going to check out some listener cues and answer some questions. And then Adam and I are going to make some Dynasty New Year's resolutions. Apparently, that's something that Jake and Keaton did last show. So we're going to try to pick it up and see if we can make some resolutions as well. All right, with all that being said, let's jump right into these crazy signings. There are a ton of them, so we're just going to pick a few and dissect them a little bit. The first one I want to talk about is Andrew Miller to the St. Louis Cardinals. I think this is a great deal for the Cardinals. They are shaping up to be my favorite in that division. We talked about that last pod, but I really think that they've got a shot to finish above the Cubs. What do you think, Adam? You're sort of our pitching guru. What do you think about Miller to the Cardinals?
He really hasn't been healthy this last year. That knee issue is troubling. That said, the St. Louis Cardinals have black devil magic, and he's probably going to end up with like some insane amount of holds. I still think that John Hicks is probably the closer there, if it's not Carlos Martinez. And also their arms in general, they could probably do a game a week where they just have three or four pitchers pitch two innings apiece. And that could be Andrew Miller and Alex Reyes and Carlos Martinez and Jordan Hicks. They just seem like the kind of team that's going to have an amazing bullpen. I just hope that Andrew Miller can stay healthy because he's, what, 34 or 35 now?
Let's take a look at that real quick.
33.
All right. And how long is the contract? 2 years?
I don't know.
Yeah, it's two years.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, like, I still think he's probably a very high-end reliever. I just don't know what he has left in him. That knee issue was persistent last year, and they don't really go away, especially when it's on your planting foot.
Yeah, they've... Like you said, though, they have so many options over in St. Louis that I think even if he isn't healthy the entire year, that he's still going to, be a gain for them, for their team, just because I feel like they're loaded with pitching. It's interesting about Carlos Martinez. You said that you think he could possibly end up being the closer. Is that mostly health related? Why you think that? I mean, I know he moved into the bullpen for a bit last year, but like he has had a bit bit trouble, you know, finishing off a full season.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at his second or third time, it's the third time through the order for him, his numbers go way down. So, like, Chris Archer kind of way down. And I'm just not sure that he'll end up sticking around, at least for the long term. Especially with, like you said, his persistent health issues. I just don't anticipate it continuing.
Keaton, what are your thoughts on Mr. Miller and the Cardinals?
I like it. I think it's a pretty good fit, and they'll be able to use him in a myriad of ways. But I'm most excited about Hicks being pretty much locked in as the closer to start the year. I'm excited about that because I think he's a really fun pitcher to watch, and I was hoping that was going to end up happening. There was a lot of people that they were rumored to be going after besides Miller, and all of the ones that they were targeting were actual closers. So Hicks still would have been in a setup role or just a whatever role. But I don't think Miller is going to be the closer, at least to start the season. So I'm excited to see Hicks get some run and get some saves.
So Patrick.
Too. Yes, sir.
We're asking about Carlos Martinez a minute ago. And I just want to follow up on that. So his 2018 season, first time through the order, was a 2.19 ERA. With a 217 average and 34 strikeouts. The WOBA was 297. His second time through the order was 2.39 ERA with 40 strikeouts and a 210 average. The third time through the order, his ERA was a 6.93 with a 283 average and a 334 WOBA with only 23 strikeouts. So his third time through the order is extremely troubling. And I really don't know if it's the injuries as much as it is the consistency and the ability to get through the lineup a third time.
Interesting. You know, I traded Matt Olson straight up for Carlos Martinez, not last year, but the year before. And I got a lot of flack for that. And it's not looking so bad now, is it? All right, well,
I'm not giving in.
Yep, all right, whatever. all right, we've got a lot to get to. Adam, thanks for indulging my Carlos Martinez interest. But let's keep going. Next one that's interesting is Daniel Murphy to the Rockies. This is a great deal for the Rockies, but not so great for Garrett Hampson. I was really looking forward to him playing on that team, and now it seems like he's blocked. Do you guys agree with that?
I think I do. One of their young players is blocked. Either he plays second and Hampson is blocked, or he plays first and McMahon is blocked. So it's just kind of continues the trend of the Rockies being just against playing their young players. And I'm sure they'll find some way to keep, Dahl and Tapia out of the outfield too, just because they're jerks.
they certainly don't like giving young players playing time. They're sort of the Jake Devereaux of Major League Baseball teams, I would say.
They are. That's good.
Thanks. Murphy's been battling some injuries, so it's possible that and he is like 97 years old. So it's possible that, the younger players get some opportunities due to health stuff. But, yeah, it seems like Hampson's blocked. I think this is great for Murphy's fantasy value in the sense that, Coors is going to sort of bump him up from his aging decline for a couple years. I like the amount of contact he makes, and in Coors Field he's going to hit for power. So, Adam, any thoughts? Anything additional?
Well, first off, Keaton, is it Tapia or Tapia?
I don't know.
Keaton, you're the name guy.
Oh, all right. Let me look it up.
All right, okay. Look it up.
Well, you're doing I don't even remember. What did I say?
You said Tapia.
Oh.
It was weird. I didn't. I was just going
to. Like Patrick level pronunciation. So
that's excellent.
But anyway, like Garrett Hampson, does he play outfield too? Because I think he's going to probably steal some at bats out there as well.
That's possible. I think they'll move him around like that.
Yeah, and Trevor Story really hasn't been the like exemplary health, right? He's had at least two seasons where he's had some serious injury. So, I mean, he could find himself playing a little bit of short as well. I think Campson's probably going to get enough at bats to satiate people into thinking in 2020 that we really need to buy in.
So maybe buy now?
Yeah. Buy low.
Yeah, I think buying low isn't a bad idea on him.
Baseball reference says Tapia.
Tapia. That's how I've always heard it, but you know, I was intrigued by your version. All right, let's keep going.
That's all right. Unlike Patrick, I can admit when I've made a mistake.
Yeah, I never admit to making mistakes. Matt Harvey and Trevor Cahill, a pair of broken pitchers over to the Los Angeles Angels, which is just the most Angels signing that they could ever do. You know, these two, if they were to ever work out, they would be amazing. Both have excellent K stuff when they're healthy. Although Matt Harvey hasn't really showed anything for a few years. I don't know. There's nothing here to take away from that. Let's keep going. Right?
Yes, right. I agree.
All right. Charlie Morton. I like this one. Charlie Morton to the Rays. I think it's what is weird about it is the amount of money that the Rays spent. But I do feel like Charlie Morton is just like the most Rays player. He feels like a very Rays player to me. And I love that they've picked him up. It's a good ballpark for him. He should. I think he's going to be a positive value for those 2 years he's in Tampa. Adam, Mr. Pitching Guru, what do you think?
I like it. I mean, Charlie Morton, I think we were talking about it before we started recording, but, you know, he's getting up there in age. And while he had that success in Houston, there's no guarantee that it'll continue on. Maybe they have a different pitching philosophy in Tampa. They always like to try to push people higher in the zone, which is weird because it never worked out for Chris Archer. But maybe Charlie Morton is the exception to the rule for them. Being 35, entering his age 35 season, I'm not totally convinced he'll hold up. I pair him with J.A. Happ in just the sense of like they had really nice seasons, or at least two or three nice seasons, and they're going to be serviceable for teams that are in their window right now. But if your window is even 2020, I would start thinking about moving Charlie Morton, or at the very least not considering acquiring him, because when pitchers go down, they go down hard.
For real. I hate pitchers. Keaton, any thoughts? Is Keaton gone?
Okay. No, I was on mute. Yeah, I pretty much disagree with Adam. I think it's a good fit. I like that the landing spot with Tampa Bay. They just keep getting more and more interesting. And for a team that won 90 games last year, I'm gonna go out on the longest of limbs here and say that the American League East has 300-win teams next year.
That's bold.
Yeah, it is.
So let's talk about that really quick then, just for a contextual factor. Charlie Morton is going to the Tampa Bay Rays. He is going to have to play the Yankees and the Red Sox regularly.
Yep.
Those two teams are considerably better than any team that he faced in the AL West. Does that have any impact on his value?
No, because he still gets to play Baltimore and Toronto.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say as well. The Orioles are a trash team. So he'll get to beat up on them. I know it's only one team. The Blue Jays are not as scary as they used to be, although they can still hit homers. But, you know, it's definitely, he's not going to have the same amount of value as he had in Houston, I don't think. He's a year older and in a tougher division. But I still think, like you said, for teams that are competing or in their contention cycle right now, I think he's a great fit. All right, so the next signing on our list here, Michael Brantley to the Astros. This is interesting for Kyle Tucker because he is most likely not going to get his shot this year unless there's an injury in that outfield or they trade Josh Reddick. Oh, what did I say?
I think you said Michael.
No, Michael Brantley.
I heard Kyle Tucker.
Sorry.
That's our producer, ladies and gentlemen, overproducing me right now as we speak.
Anytime you want to start listening to the program, madam.
Wait, what did you say?
All right, so Michael Brantley to the Astros is interesting. It's not great for Kyle Tucker's value, just in the sense that he's going to be blocked. There's a possibility, I've heard rumors of him being traded to the Marlins for JT Realmuto, which would be interesting. I think that's a good fit for each team, but we'll see. Any thoughts on Brantley? I mean, he's just a fantastic contact hitter who's going to give you double-digit homers and probably double-digit steals. I love him. He's underrated in fantasy. He's particularly helpful in ratios, but and I think Houston is going to be a great fit for him. Keaton, thoughts?
Yeah. No, we talked about Brantley in one of the previous pods, as he's a guy that will find a landing spot and be really good for whoever he signs with. And he's going to be really good for the Astros. Health has been his biggest issue, but the Astros also have a whole bunch of depth. So if he does end up going down for a significant period of time, they've got guys that can step in and they won't miss a beat. But for the time that he is on the field, which hopefully is the whole season, he's going to be pretty productive. So that's a real good signing.
And Adam, anything?
No, not worth anything that Keaton hasn't already said.
What about what Patrick's already said?
No one cares what Patrick's already said.
I mean, you don't want me to answer that honestly, right?
No, I guess not. New York Mets signed Wilson Ramos. Great deal for the Mets. We can keep going there unless either of you have strong opinions about that. Nope. Okay. Keep it.
Not until he gets injured, like all the other Mets catchers.
And pitchers and outfielders.
And everyone on their team. You know what,
hey,
is
Patrick, I have a question for you.
Yeah, what's your question, sir?
What's your feelings on the Texas Rangers signing Lance Lynn?
I was just about to dive into that. Oh my God, what a ridiculous signing. What is going on? Why are you signing Lance Lynn? Let him go. Let the guy just go. The only reasonable way to use him is as a platoon bullpen arm, someone that just comes in and faces right-handed pitchers. Are right-handed hitters and pitchers. Just that's it. That's the only way you can use him. If you load up on lefties, he's screwed. Texas is a terrible ballpark for him to pitch in. It's not quite as bad as Yankee Stadium, but still, I hate the whole thing. I hate it. I hate it all. I just get out of baseball, Lance Lynn. Go.
Well, I mean, he's probably being signed to help pitch against the Red Sox in Game 3. Of the NLDS. That's my assumption.
You know, I just watched that game for Christmas because that game was almost better than the World Series. The game was so good. Going into Yankee Stadium and scoring 16 runs. Beautiful. And Lance Lynn was a part of it. Ugh, just warms my heart. Okay, well, now that I've lost.
I was told that he was signed so that he could take the Red Sox out because of the Sports.
Yeah, who told you that?
Patrick, I don't even think he was on the postseason roster.
Yes, he was.
Well, that was a mistake for them.
I just watched the game. It was
wasn't that Hap?
No, it was Lance Lynn.
I feel like they're interchangeable.
Well, Hap is actually better.
They aren't. Hap is considerably better over a considerable amount of time. There is Lance Lynn. That's true.
Lance Lynn is just garbage. That's it, guys. I'm sure he's a wonderful human. Actually, I'm not sure about that. But yeah, you know, I don't know him enough to. But I don't enjoy him as a baseball player. All right, moving along. Next big one I think worth mentioning is Andrew McCutchen to the Phillies. Effectively, probably taking them out of the Bryce Harper sweepstakes. Can we agree on that? No.
I'm gonna leave that door open.
Wow. All right. Oh, wow. So you both think that Harper could still possibly end up with the Phillies?
Yes. I don't see why the Philadelphia Phillies would be like, hey, we don't need a 26-year-old superstar. We have Andrew McCutchen.
Their outfield's kind of full now, isn't it? They've got, what, Nick Williams, Andrew McCutchen, and Rhys Hoskins probably moving to first base. So who's the other dude there that's good?
Odubel.
Yeah, Odubel Herrera.
I just don't see any of those names precluding a signing of Bryce Harper.
Well, we would make a wager on this, but I don't feel like it, so we're just going to keep going then. Is this good for Andrew McCutchen's value? I mean, it stays the same, goes up. What do you think?
Probably stays the same. I think we kind of know what he is.
Yeah, not quite the superstar he once was, that's for sure. Adam, you have a...
He'll get run. He wasn't really getting a lot of run in the Yankees, was he?
He was playing. I mean, I think he was in the playoff games. I think he is just kind of what he is at this point. You know, he's just, his skill set has declined, but he's still a good player.
So where would you rank him in your outfielder rankings?
Well, let me just tell you, sir.
We both have him ranked 72.
There we go. Is that real?
That's real.
Well, I have him. Oh, that's Benintendi.
Give me some names just above Andrew McCutchen.
For Patrick or for me?
Yes.
So for me, I have Eric Thames above him. I have Trey Mancini, Domingo Santana. I had Billy Hamilton. I probably need to change that, huh? Now that Billy Hamilton... Well, he's got a starting gig, right? He's actually on the Royals. Am I correct in that?
He is actually on the Royals.
Good. So he'll get playing time. I don't feel terrible about that. And he's only... Well, maybe I do. I should probably change that. Anyways, I have Lewis Brinson above him, which is me just loving Lewis Brinson and just not giving in. Jackie Bradley Jr., Who would you rather have?
McCutchen.
So Jackie Bradley Jr. or McCutchen to you, Adam?
Probably McCutchen, yeah.
Okay. Let's see. Teoscar Hernandez or Andrew McCutchen?
Teoscar.
Okay. So that puts him in like the 60s range for me if you were to rank him there. Jock Peterson or McCutch?
Peterson,
yeah.
Same. Okay, so maybe in the 60s then, it feels like for us. I have him ranked.
I think you have him in the 70s.
I do, so maybe I need to bump him up before our outfield rankings are published. I'll get in there and bump him up.
That's why we do these things.
All right, that's enough talk about McCutchen. Let's move on. Do we want to talk about Billy Hamilton? He's going to have a starting job. He's going to steal bases.
Yeah, I like it. It definitely helps me in valuing him a little bit more. I was really worried when he was cut from the Reds. So he'll probably have another 40-plus stolen base season, and he'll be extremely valuable because that's the one category that doesn't have a lot of people in there. It'll be fascinating to see how fast they go with Adalberto Mondesi and him, and they have one other dude. Oh, Whit Merrifield. And just seeing how much they steal over the course of a season, especially with old man Ned Yost.
I wasn't listening. How was that? Was it good?
It was great. Great analysis.
Sorry, my wife just got home, and there's going to be a sleeping baby joining me in this room. So great. Yeah, there's going to be a lot of speed on that team, huh?
That's
for real. Patrick Corbin to the Washington Nationals. They're still in it. That's going to be a fun division to watch. And it's still a possibility that Harper ends up back with Washington, which I think would be great. I actually feel like if he doesn't end up with the Dodgers, I think the Nationals are the team he ends up with. Thoughts on Corbin? He's still going to be good. That slider's nasty. Velocity dip isn't too much of a concern. Am I correct?
You are correct. I like it a lot. I think it's a great fit.
And Adam has no thoughts. Adam, you want us to talk about somebody?
Yeah, I need Keaton and you to talk about the Justin Bourque signing with the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim.
I mean, I don't think that's great news for Albert Pujols. I mean, not that there was any good news coming from him for a while now. But I think, you know, probably going to lose some playing time to Bohr. I actually like that signing quite a bit. I like Justin Bohr. He's, you know, big fella with some thump and a lot of patience. So he's right up my alley. I like it.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like Boar's value doesn't really change much, but it does take away some from Pujols. But we kind of expected that to happen anyway with his age and his declining performance. So
you really don't think that it adds value to Boar? He was buried in Philadelphia. Like, he had been a random cut from Miami and picked up and really didn't bat all that much. And now he's going to be on a team that he'll get regular at-bats, right? I mean, there's nobody at first base for the Angels.
I mean, he's going to be splitting with Pujols, and then Otani's at DH for the majority of the season. So he's still going to be not a full-time role for him, but he'll have some more at-bats.
Well, with Pujols' plantar fasciitis, I don't think he plays a full season either, right? So
no.
He has 450 at-bats or so in him, and that's about 20 to 25 home runs minimum.
Yeah. And that's what I would say Boar is. I would say Boar is about probably 400 at bats and about, you know, 20 home runs, if he's getting that many at bats. 20 to 25 home runs, like you said, Adam. So, I mean, yeah, he's more valuable than he was buried in Philadelphia, for sure. But I guess I just don't think of him as being buried in Philadelphia because he wasn't there for that long. And he actually ended up putting up similar numbers last year, just a little bit worse than the year before with the Marlins. So, I really do think that his value is pretty much the same. Obviously, it's better if you have him in Dynasty, and now he has a, you know, better pathway to playing time. So,
I don't know, Adam. Is he rosterable in 16-team leagues?
Yes. You too.
14-team leagues.
As a bench option, yeah, I guess.
Okay.
Really, you know, doing those, we've been doing some mock drafts over at the Dynasty Guru, and we've been doing 14 and 16 team mock drafts, and I don't play in a lot of leagues that shallow. It's been eye-opening as to what players have particular value. All right, is that enough on Justin Boar for you, Adam? Are you satisfied?
I am so satisfied. Thank you.
This one I want to give a shout out to Dr. Mike Tanner, who called Garrett Richards basically getting the what's that guy's name that was hurt? My memory
Michael
is so good.
Michael Pineda.
Thank you. Yeah, getting the Michael Pineda deal. 2 years, he's going to be paid minimum for the first year of his deal, and then he's got some. He'll be getting paid a little more when he's actually pitching in the following year. So. San Diego, I think that's a great deal for them. You know, Richards, how do you feel about this? I should really just turn this over to you, Keaton. How do you feel about your boy being signed to San Diego?
I like it. San Diego, we've talked about several times being a really interesting team, and I think this kind of adds to it. Obviously, he'll be out for all of 2019, but he'll be back for 2020, and they're still going to be interesting and probably able to kind of compete, and he'll be a great fit. I'm actually glad he got the surgery now because the platelet injections that he was getting and trying to just avoid the surgery clearly wasn't working. So it's a bummer that this lost season could have happened sooner. And then he may have come back and been a bit more healthy after it, but he's getting it now. So he'll come back, and I think he'll still be a pretty good pitcher on an interesting team in San Diego.
Any thoughts from you, Adam, on Richards?
No. Keaton hit the nail on the head. I mean, when he comes back, he's what, 33, 34? I think we've talked about this before, but if you don't really have a lot of value for Johnny Cueto, you really don't have a lot of value for Garrett Richards at this point.
Yeah, well, the one thing about Richards is at least he'll be on, you know, do we expect the Padres to be competitive by next year?
I don't know. They have a really interesting roster. Richards, when he comes back in 2020, will be 31.
Yeah, so there's more value for Richards than there is for Cueto. 31's old, but not too old. It's, I mean, he's dead in Dynasty because 30 is the cutoff. You know, everyone hates to roster 30-year-olds except for Jake.
With Cueto's injuries, though, isn't there more of a concern that his career is just completely done at this point?
I think he's done in Dynasty. Like, I don't think he's going to be a plus value for your team. I just don't. Yeah. For me, I do not want to own him anywhere. I don't know about. I mean, I think he'll still pitch. It's not like
Richards has been the exemplary health, right? So
I don't know what you're talking about. He's always healthy.
Oh, okay. I mean, to be fair, he's entering his age 31 season right now, so he'll be 32 when he gets back.
He'll be 31 to start the season.
He'll be like 31 in like 10 months. So
yeah,
most of his season will be 32.
I'm going to start calling you the TT for technical troll. The technical troll.
Well, sorry, excuse me. It's not 2.8. It's 2.9. So you're wrong.
Well, actually.
Mm-hmm. How's that? A pretty good Keaton impression from both of us?
Sounds just like me, yeah.
Yeah, all right. This signing is super interesting to me. Nathan Eovaldi's going back to the Red Sox. That's such a great move for that team. He can be in the pen. He can be in the rotation. Do you think the sort of flashes of brilliance he showed last year is going to carry over? I mean, is this somebody that could really be an asset in dynasty formats? Or is he sort of a better real-life player than he is fantasy?
That's a good question. Yeah. It's a good question. I really think it depends. If he pitches a full year like he did the second half with the Red Sox, then yeah, there's a ton of value there. I wouldn't expect him to take his playoff performance and put that over an entire season. That seems pretty aggressive. But if he's, you know, a 3.2 ERA with a whole crap ton of strikeouts, that's pretty valuable. There's obviously a lot of risk with it, though, but I don't see why not.
He said he wants to be a starter. Like, he's signed there saying, I'm going to be a starter. I think if they didn't make certain promises to him that he would have looked elsewhere, despite the fact right. that he loves the Red Sox. So,
yeah, so he'll probably be a starter. And I think Keaton's right that ERA is probably going to be in the 3.8 range. And if he can bump up that strikeout rate, man, he is going to be a force. Right now, he's traditionally pitched around a 7 or 8 K per 9. Last year was his highest at 8.19. Other than in the minors, he blew hitters away with that fastball, that easy 99 for him. But he hasn't really been able to do that in the majors. But he developed a third pitch over the course of last season and had success. So he's somebody to watch. He's an easy target by low, I think, in most leagues. I don't think people value him too highly. So somebody consider if you're desperate for pitching. All right, moving on. Just one more, I think. Let's just talk about Jonathan Scope because I freaking love him. Love that the Twins picked him up. The Twins are making all sorts of crazy, interesting moves as Cleveland's window starts to close. Theirs might begin to open, at least in the sense that they'll be competitive in that crappy division until the White Sox rebuild is complete. I like Scope. He is a contact-driven player, doesn't walk a lot, but has a lot of pop. So if he can bump up his contact, you should see a bounce back to 2017 is what I'm hoping for. He's still quite young, too, so I think his value is probably pretty low right now and is worthy of a target in Dynasty Leagues. Adam, you have any thoughts on Scope?
I was just looking up his age. I mean, I'm interested. I think that he's just the replacement for Ryan Dozier at this point. So he has a lot of that same kind of power and a little bit of speed mixed in. His glove is plus at second. And I just think that he'll definitely have that middle, like high-end middle infielder, low-end second baseman value. With the potential for more, but if you need that 25 home runs and 5 or 6 steals, he's your dude.
Yeah, at second base, I think that's a tremendous value. Keaton, you agree?
I do.
All right. Wow, we made it through all the signings that I want to talk about. So congratulations, guys. We did it. Okay, I'll clap. Nobody else clap. Great. All right, let's move on to listener questions, shall we?
Yeah.
All right. So we got a question from our good friend Matt, who wants us to divvy up the time for first base for the Twins. Boy, oh boy, do I not want to touch this one yet. Keaton, thoughts?
Yeah. Well, Nelson Cruz, I would assume, is going to be the full-time DH there. God, there's so many people. I guess the majority of time is probably going to be Crone. I don't know how, if that's a ton of time, though. But I think he's probably going to be the guy that sees the majority share, maybe 50%. And then 30% Tyler Austin and 20% Sano and Astudillo. I think that's my guess. Maybe Kepler gets in there a little bit, too. I don't know. There's a lot of dudes and, you know, only so many at-bats.
Yeah, I tend to think that Tyler Austin is going to be used as a platoon bat only. You know, he's got some upside, but I think he'll be used mostly just against left-handed pitching. So he doesn't see a ton of at-bats. And then, yeah, the rest of them are probably split between Cron and Astudillo. I'm sure they're going to get Astudillo playing time. Adam, do you have thoughts?
I'm going to make a bold prediction and say that Miguel Sano gets the majority of at-bats at first.
That is a hella bold prediction. So you think he's done with third base?
He's so bad at third base. I think they'll start him there at the beginning of the year. And if he's still a sloth, then they'll probably move him over to first because they need his at-bat and see what happens. I mean, they got CJ Cron for a song. So it's not like they have a big financial investment there. I don't see it being something where Miguel Sano's there long term anyway.
Wow. I do think that Sano probably has to move over to first base at some point because he's had some lower body issues. I don't know that I can. They do have him listed on the depth chart at first base, so possible, and they have Astudillo listed as their starting third baseman. Now,
they also have Torres. Ronaldo, yeah. Torres.
I was going to say, we can take that with a grain of salt to some degree, just because, you know, it's still so early in the off season. But yeah, I would like their team better if they had Sano batting full time at first base and Astudillo at third base full time. Although I don't.
Don't forget, Nick Gordon's floating around too.
Yeah,
so he can come in and play third base or on shortstop or third base, or Jorge Polanco can move over to third base. So I don't see Sano there long term.
Yeah, I agree. I don't see Sano there long term, but I don't know if that transition happens. I like that, though. I like that bold prediction. It's not quite antagonizing enough to get me all worked up and make a deal with you. Or a bet with you, rather. All right, so Keaton doled out his time. Adam's crazy and thinks Sano's stealing the first base gig, and I'm indifferent. Moving on, we got Yancey, who gave us a great question. He'd like to hear some words of wisdom on this Nelson Cruz signing and some hardcore opinioning on why the F the Rays didn't beat the Twins to this. I can answer the Rays question pretty easily. The Rays probably find this job for someone else for cheaper. You know, they don't need to spend $14 million on Nelson Cruz, old man Nelson Cruz. And they've got a few internal options coming. The roster seems to be really built around max flexibility of players anyways, carrying a lot of players who can play multiple positions. And then they've got that big, sexy first base DH option in Nathan Lowe on the way. So I don't think it was necessary. I think it's a better fit for the Twins than the Rays. Although I will admit that it does seem like a very possible Rays move, but they're not going to spend $14 million on a player like that, I don't think. Adam, let's start with you this time on if you have any opinions or you have a way to answer this question.
Yeah, well, the Rays did make a go for Cruz. They offered him reportedly about $10 million, and Cruz went for the extra $4 million more because he's got 1 year left. And so Yeah, the Rays, I just feel like the Rays probably need the multi-positional player more so, and they value that person more so than an aging vet that's going to hit maybe 40 bombs. What was the second question from Yancey?
He just wanted us to... So the first actually, the second question was about the Rays. The first one is words of wisdom on the Nelson Cruz signing. So the words of wisdom... are we think it's good. It's a good deal. Yeah. There's no bad 1 year deals.
He's gonna have a 370 OBP. He's gonna be awesome. He's gonna hit 35 bombs and he's gonna be very good for a 40-year-old man. So
yeah, and I think that contract has an option too, where both parties have to agree. So there's a possibility that he's still playing there next year too. Keats, anything?
You guys hit it on the analysis, but the word in his question is opining.
Damn it. My pronunciation strikes again.
Yeah.
We got a question from John. What the heck to do about Mondesi? What's his trade value? What's a reasonable return? Either one of you want to start off on this?
Well, I'm the low man on Mondesi, but his current stock is sky high. So if you're a reasonable return is always tough. But I would trade him if I were in John's shoes and owned Mondesi. I would shop him around to pretty much everyone in the league, and someone's going to overpay. But putting actual value on it, maybe kind of like a top 20 pitcher and a bench bat. Seems like his sky-high value would cover that.
All right. And Adam?
So just a producer's note for all you listeners out there. When you send in questions, let us know what your league context is. That might help us at least provide some specific value to you. But as far as Mondesi and his actual value goes, Jesse has him in his top 50 of his top 600. That's pretty good. That's pretty high value. He's just right there along lines with Rafael Devers and Gary Sanchez. For me personally, I think I might be lower on him than Keaton is, but I don't know that to be 100% true. I just don't see him being... I have the same concerns about him as I did about Jonathan VR in 2016. So that batted ball profile is rough. And when the floor hits, it's going to crater. And so... top 50 is reasonable right now, and I would sell off if I could, because I could see him being a top 150 next year.
Yeah, I, as a whole, I think this entire podcast is sort of down on Mondesi. You know, I like the speed and power combo. Dr. Mike Tanner, when he was on our podcast, made a great point about acquiring Moncada later in drafts. And so I think that Moncada could be a trade chip or someone that you could trade for. You could get Moncada plus, you know, because Moncada's stock is down and he's going to provide similar power and speed numbers. So I think you could get Moncada, and I actually like Moncada more as a dynasty asset anyways. So I would try moving him for Moncada and more. If you still want to keep that speed and power combo, you can get that from Moncada and then get, you know, a prospect, a pick, or another player on top of it. So that's my scheme for you.
Yeah, I didn't realize that Jesse had him in the top 50. That's some pretty high helium. So a top 20 pitcher is probably too low. You can probably go higher than that.
All right, let's keep going here. We got a question from Ken, who asks, what should you reasonably expect to get in return for Wander Franco? Top 10 prospect, but only in he's only 18 in an org known for slow-playing prospects. I'm going to answer this real quick because I just wrote up Wander Franco in my shortstop risers and fallers piece. I would want the entire world for Franco. I'm so head over heels for him. I honestly would not move him right now. His stock is most likely going to grow this year. I still think that he's going to end up as the number one prospect by the end of the year, and that's going to be more valuable than his current stock. But if you were to try to trade him, some players I might target include Jameson Taillon, Jack Flaherty, Puig, or Devers, somebody in the top 80 range. I really would want the world for him. I think he's going to be great. what would it take for you two to trade Franco? Why don't we start with Keaton?
Yeah, I think I agree with you on holding. He's 18 and the Rays tend to long play people. But that doesn't mean, you know, he's going to be any less of a player. If you have the time to sit on him and wait, then do it. If not, then you'd be looking for a young shortstop that can help you more in the now than the later. I would assume if you're trying to move him, but if you're in a situation where you can hold him, even with the Rays typically long playing guys, then he's a guy that you shouldn't look to trade.
Adam?
So I might be I'm going to be the guy that disagrees here. Shortstop is not the barren wasteland it used to be. You have a ton of young MLB-ready prospects or near-ready prospects, and then you also have a ton of MLB talent on the shortstop side. So just off the top of my head, when I think of the prospects, I'm thinking of Royce Lewis. I'm thinking of Luis Garcia, thinking of Fernando Tatis Jr. I mean, you have what's that dude's name out in Colorado? Not McMahon, the other one.
Brendan Rodgers.
I mean, that's just off the top of my head, and those are all elite talents that probably aren't too far off of the value that might be commanded by Franco. And also, they're a lot closer to the MLB, the show. So I'm valuing those handful of players as well as any number of young MLB stars at the shortstop position over Franco. I know that he's going to be a generational talent. I understand that people love him, but for me, I'm not asking for the world from Franco. If somebody's going to give it to me, great, but I'm not expecting it.
All right. Well, there you go. Two opinions that are right and one that is wrong. Let's move on to our next question from the really well-named Meathead, who asks, what do you think of the ETA on Keston Hira is for the Brewers this year, and what do you see him doing in his initial appearance in the bigs? Also, what type of value do you think Eduardo Escobar is going to have going forward in the desert? Will the loss of Goldie create a move to first base for Lamb, opening third base for Escobar? So Hira, I think, will be up early this season, depending on his performance in AAA. I think he starts the year in AAA, and I think that, if he had a super strong spring training, I don't know what his contract status stuff is like. So, you know, they're going to wait and push him back until they can call him up for minimum money. But he'll be up, I think, as soon as that is possible, because the Brewers are contending, and Hira is a great hitter with a 60 hit tool and 60 power that plays a great position at second base. Yeah, I love him. I think he's up as soon as possible. I do think he's going to be a bit streaky, and he will probably struggle at first because he has such a sort of aggressive approach at the plate. He's not a walking kind of prospect. He swings a lot, but he's such a good hitter that he'll overcome that. I think if he comes up, look for him to have a bad start, because that might be an opportunity to buy low. You guys have thoughts on Hira?
I do. I actually don't think he's going to contribute much at all next year. So he only played about 60% of his games last year at AA. So I think that's probably where he's going to start. And then maybe after a month or two, be called up to AAA, and then probably most likely be a September call up. And then if the Brewers are contending, probably won't play a ton because they're just going to keep going with their major league talent. So I think it's most likely going to be 2020 before he starts making much of an impact on the major league roster. If the Brewers were not contending, I think I would agree with you, because they would have more leash to give him playing time and adjust at the major league level. But because they will be, then I think he's going to end up getting slow played and really start to make contributions to your fantasy team in 2020 rather than next season. But he'll probably be a September call-up, get maybe 10 to 15 games, and that will probably be it for him, I would think.
Interesting. Adam?
I'm just looking at roster resource really quick to see what else is out there for them. Because I know second base Travis Shaw could be there. I don't think that he's long term.
Now he's playing short.
Yeah, he's playing shortstop. Shaw? Yeah.
What?
Yeah, right? It's amazing.
There's no way he's playing shortstop.
There is.
No, Patrick, that wasn't serious. He's not playing shortstop.
Yes, he is.
Orlando Arcia is going to play shortstop.
Yeah.
God damn it.
Okay, so they have.
I swear to God, I heard that was true somewhere.
They have.
I think it was when I said it in Slack like a month ago.
Yeah. Well.
Damn. I was joking then too.
I'm pretty gullible, so.
They have Corey Spangenberg listed at the second base. So that's not going to last either. And Hernan Pernaez is out there. I don't know. I don't see Corey Spangenberg stopping a contending team from bringing up their all-star prospect. So maybe a May call up. And like Patrick said, he's uber aggressive. Yeah, he has a polished bat, but I'm not sure that it's something that you want to buy in on this year or expect this year to have some serious contribution.
And one more note regarding the second part of your question about Escobar. I think that's a really great observation. I do think that Escobar should produce similar value even in Arizona. It might tick down a bit, but he's raised his ISO for the past 2 years in a row and showed similar plate discipline. I don't see any reason why his production would tick down more than just a little due to the humidor, and I certainly think that it's possible that Lamb ends up over at first base. But I don't really love Lamb either way, no matter what position he plays. So, and you guys have any opinions on Escobar? Is that good?
That's pretty good. I think you summed it
team
up.
Team context is a little scary, right? Goldie's gone. Alec's gone. You have David Peralta, I guess.
Nick Ahmed.
Oh, boy. and then we have a question from Craig. Would you sell Forrest Whitley while you can? No.
Yeah, I would also say no.
I don't understand the while you can question.
Well, it's, you know, once you can't, then you can't. So now while you can,
yeah, you don't want to
should you do it while you can?
You don't want to do it when you can't.
You've really cleared that up for me. Is Forrest Whitley?
That's what I'm here for.
Is he dying or what's happening?
Well, yeah, I think this probably comes from pitching prospects, kind of thing, and. No, I think.
What was that?
Oh.
Is he a Scooby-Doo villain? What the hell is that?
And I would have gotten away with it, too, if it wasn't for damn Forrest Whitley and his kids and the dog. Okay.
It would have been better if it was Tommy John.
Well.
Damn Tommy John.
You know, he's closer to 30 than he is 10. Mm. And we all know you die in fantasy when you get to 30.
It's true. So he's almost dead.
If you can't tell, what was this guy's name? Meathead?
Nope, Craig. Meathead provided a strong question.
Craig, do better.
Craig, keep listening to the show. I love you, but do not sell Forrest Whitley.
Yeah, you don't need to sell.
Correct.
All right. And then, Keaton, you did a New Year's resolution kind of thing last pod. Do you want to fill us in on that?
Sure. Jake and I made fantasy New Year's resolutions, and then we talked about them.
Wow. Thanks for the summary. I'm sure you were a tremendous host on that episode as well.
I was.
So what was your New Year's resolution for Dynasty Baseball?
Sure. I'll just highlight them. Win my home league, make the playoffs in TGGX2, build up my farm in TGGX2, and then go undefeated against you chumps on this podcast.
In your dreams, man. My team is not good.
You're the one that I'm not worried about at all.
You should be worried. Have you seen my bats? My bats are good. Just nobody will pitch against you. All right, Adam, do you have any resolutions?
I think the first one that I have, well, first off, I like to not do resolutions because then it sets up an expectation. And if you ask my wife, I try to set minimal expectations, and then that way that helps out a lot. But truthfully, like, I'd really like to get more into prospect scouting, like the actual scouting of a prospect. So we live in North Carolina. There's a lot of minor league teams. I'd like to just go to at least a couple dozen baseball games and actually do some scouting, and be able to translate it, that into my dynasty formats.
Nice. That's a really good one. I like that a lot. My resolutions are going to be two, and this is going to come as a shocking truth. I'm going to try to get more players with speed on my teams. I know, wild. I'm going to try it. And then I'm going to try to hoard pitching prospects as a strategy in Dynasty, where I have my bats already established. I'm going to try to hoard pitching prospects and see if I can't build a championship team that way. I don't know that it'll work. Pitching prospects are notoriously bad news, but I think if I have enough quantity of good pitching prospects, that maybe I can end up with a decent staff. So that's what I'm going to try to do this year. Those are my two resolutions. And I guess I'll add beating Keaton in TDGX, just not finishing higher in him in the standings, but beating him head-to-head as one of my resolutions as well.
Did you forget one?
What's that?
Did you forget the other one that you talked about earlier?
What's the other one? No. Nope. Shut up. I hate you.
Walked right into it.
I mean, like, it's a big goal, I know, because it's almost impossible to stop being such a little bitch about things, but...
This has been Dynasty's Child, part of the Dynasty Guru website. I've been your host, Patrick Magnus. What are you going to say, Keaton?
Do you know what Adam's favorite book to read in school was?
What was it?
Great Expectations.
This has been Dynasty's Child, part of the Dynasty Guru website. I've been your host, Patrick Magnus. You can find all of us on the Dynasty Guru, where Keaton has written about...
Profar and Catcher Comments.
Yeah, that Profar article coming out soon?
Yeah.
Okay. And Jake is just working on rankings and doing stuff over at the Red Seat. Adam, have you ranted like a lunatic about anything in particular lately?
No, I mean, outside of the Slack channel, where we've argued incessantly about how we rank and when we rank and who we rank and where we rank them.
Oh, yeah. It's the holiday season over at the Dynasty Guru has been full of cheer, let me tell you.
Makes me want to gouge out my eyes. I've written some stuff over at Pitcher List during the off season, but I'm going to start gearing back up. We got that TPU life looming.
Oh, God. Yeah, and I still got to finish my... my risers and fallers. I got a few more positions I need to bang out of that, and doing Catcher Comments. So you can look for Catcher Comments soon. Keaton and I are both doing the top 20. He's doing the top 10, and I'm doing the top 11 through 20. So you can check those out soon, and I'll have my risers and fallers for outfield coming out probably within the next week or two. And you can find me on Twitter at The Green Magnus. You can find Keaton over at The Spoken Keats. You can find Jake at Dev Jake. And you can find our wonderful producer, Adam Lawler, at The Statcast Era. All right, guys. This has been a hell of a podcast. I'm glad to be back in the saddle doing this again. Have an awesome day. And as always, be the best.
Wait, but Patrick.
Oh, you goddamn. What? Yes, Keaton, what?
What's your favorite song from the 90s? Loser by Beck.
That's going to do it. Have an awesome day, and as always, be the best bird dog you can be.